Hi there, and welcome to We Will Rank You, the podcast world's latest and greatest entry into the world of musical appreciation. As always, we have Dan in the area of the West Coast, commonly referred to as the Bay Area. Say hi, Dan.
Yeah.
Jim, who resides in luxurious Ventura County.
We call that South Santa Barbara.
Nice. Like East La Jolla. Exactly. And from the cold climates of Colorado, we have Sam.
Actually, it was really nice today. It was in the 60s, and it was a wonderful spring day here in Colorado.
How lovely and contrarian.
Sorry about you.
Oh, well. So after recording four episodes of our award-winning podcast, our adoring public has been clamoring for two things: our detailed life stories and a recap of the five albums that we talked about before we started recording our chats. So we've gathered here to give you that and so much more. So our story starts in San Diego, California, with one Daniel, who is the first to get to San Diego, as far as I know. Born and raised or no?
No. Wait, are we really doing our life stories?
Yes. In 5 minutes or less.
People are going to love that. Five minutes?
Maybe seven.
I moved to San Diego when I was almost three, so it's basically my hometown.
Fair enough. Close enough. And Jim followed suit, arriving from, where did you come from, Jim Keff?
Tulsa, Oklahoma, in 1983, and Dan's dad was my soccer coach.
Living on Tulsa time.
Nice. So I followed shortly after in ninth grade. I was moving to San Diego when I was 6 years old, and we were music buddies from a teenage era. Listened to a lot of new wave and alternative rock. Went to shows, made lists, nerded out, which set the groundwork for us doing this podcast in a lot of ways. We went our separate ways, but I stayed in San Diego for 1 year to do college radio at San Diego State, which is where I didn't meet Sam, even though you were there too that year. Is that right? You were there that year that I was there?
Yeah, I started San Diego State in 88.
Okay. And so then
I was living in Colorado and then moved out to San Diego. And I wanted to join the college radio station. And so I did at KCR. And that's why I heard tapes that Adam had made and that remained in the rack, like the little carts.
Oh, commercials
years.
I made. Right.
Oh, yeah. Cal copy. Yes. That's burned into my brain. Cal copy, that is.
Wow.
But yeah, and then I heard Adam doing a show on, was it 91X?
It was. The station that we all grew up on, or the three of us grew up on.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. I mean, that's part of the reason why I wanted to go to San Diego, because 91X was amazing. And heard Adam doing a radio show and called in. I'm like, you're the guy that's on the tapes at KCR and you're playing great music. And
that's amazing.
And that's how we... And then so, like, I think you came over to my apartment, and
I believe
we were like playing music and stuff. And
hey,
just,
there's a family podcast. Let's say that.
Yeah, it was college
playing music.
So, so your one time radio idol. Now you're working alongside him, Sam. How does that feel?
I sometimes can't believe it.
Dreams come true.
Dreams can come true. It can happen to you if you're young and hard, Danny.
So we all hung out a few times in our college years, probably only ever three at a time, but I was going to put this out to you guys. The only time I can think of where we all might have been in the same room, and maybe one of you wasn't there, was the 1993 K-Rock Acoustic Christmas show. I know Dan was there because we bought tickets together.
Yep.
Stayed up all night and...
Worth
lined
it.
Up on the wrong side of my student union, but that's a whole other story. That's not entertaining for anyone else. Jim, you were there for that?
Yes.
And Sam, were you there for
that? I was there for Saturday night.
Saturday night was not the night I think that they were there, though. Was Saturday night Smashing Pumpkins, Rage Against the Machine, and all that stuff? Porno for Pyros.
Whatever night Billy Idol played.
No, because I had not seen Billy Idol until like years ago.
So you came up the night before. So this is as close as we may ever get to all being in the same room as staring at each other in a Let It Be style.
Jim wasn't at the Jellyfish show?
I was at every Jellyfish show.
No, not the one at USD, I don't think.
Where No Doubt opened.
No.
Yeah.
Correct.
Halloween.
Yeah. And then there was... there was another, the Magic Mountain one Dan wasn't at. So again,
right.
There's only photographic proof of us at that Magic Mountain show and at a Posey show on New Year's Eve with me, Dan, and Jim, going into 94, I believe. 93? 94.
God, my history.
So, zero idea. Are you kidding me?
I sound so good.
So everyone moves away, as a great man once sang.
Yes.
Sam went back to Colorado. Dan was in Chicago. He went back to the Bay Area. I was in San Diego for 25 years. And during some of that time, we would have group chats about music, of course. One of the main subjects that we would talk about was Dan's list of his favorite songs of the year, which was, 100? How long have you been doing that?
Top 100. I've been doing it 1 year older than my daughter, so 14 years.
Holy moly.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you kind of took the torch. I used to do these
100 songs a year, can only be one song per artist, and it has to have been released that year. So just like you and I used to do, it's got to follow very specific rules.
Which I know you wholehearted, appreciate. Yeah, I totally wholeheartedly agree with that kind of thinking. So for years, we would chat. And I think we hadn't chatted for quite a long time. But at the beginning of the pandemic, when people were starting to try to connect this way, I also went through some of my old archives, and as was my dad, and putting stuff up online, old videos. And he found a video of Sam, me, and Jim playing guitar in my living room that none of us had seen in 25 years. So there we were playing Pale Shelter by Tears for Fears, which we were just discussing before.
I was wearing Birkenstocks with socks.
And a ponytail.
You still do. Come on. Admit it.
Sure. As you do.
I was wearing baggy jeans and a baggy shirt because it was the 90s.
Ah, nice. I was wearing a Rubber Soul shirt because it was 1965, but I digress. So that was back in March, and every month or two, somebody would throw something out in our little musical chat. And one day, I think it was maybe November or so, I was supposed to go up and see Jim and have dinner with him. But the plague pandemic hit us really, really hard that day, and we had to cancel. And since Sam had thrown out that day, I was listening to, funny enough, the Beatles' Red Album. And was thinking of you, Adam, and that got us started on a chat and said, as long as we're chatting, why don't we do a Zoom? So we Zoomed, and sometime during that call, and I don't know who came up with the idea, we decided to...
It was Dan.
You think it was Dan?
If it's a game, it's probably me.
I know it was Dan.
Yeah, well, Dan, I did look back, and Sam had earlier in the day given us his favorite songs on Music for the Masses, the Depeche Mode album. And
well, so maybe Sam, that led to it? Sam deserves credit because Sam did it on Twitter first, where he did all of Depeche and all of Cure.
And that credit goes to Craig, I think his last name is Parker, who's at COF. He ran a zine, runs a zine called Chain of Flowers, a Cure zine. And so he was like, yeah, I'll just rank all the songs on the Cure albums. And so like I started following in, and a bunch of his Twitter followers did. And then he's like, yeah, what the hell, do Depeche Mode. And then did that. And and I followed along. And so that's where Dan had seen that. And, you know, and we had talked about it there.
We're Twitter buddies. So, well, I started imitating you. I didn't keep up every album, but I started imitating some of those albums.
We started playing along. Yeah. And then so like when this came around, then Dan was like, oh, well, Sam did this thing. And like ranked all these songs, and then it was like, well, why don't we do that? And Voyole.
Yeah.
Good copier.
So the first time we done did it, we did two albums, which we'll talk about right now. We did five albums, and it was I think it was after the fifth album that I said, hey guys, would this make a good podcast? And you all said, you haven't been thinking this all along. So
I think we said if you have good internet service, yes, it will.
Hypothetically.
I said, wait, you mean four white guys talking about music on a podcast?
It's never been done. Oh, never my been gosh. Done. What a great idea.
So niche. So niche.
Niche. Just right. Right.
Well, that's kind of the story so far. So let's talk about the five albums that we did. Sam,
do it.
Basically, pick the first two, so we're going to let you introduce.
So the like Dan said, we started out with a Cure record. They sent me all their picks, and I made this wonderful PowerPoint presentation, and then completely forgot we were doing another album, or didn't realize we were doing another album. The first record we did was The Cure's The Head on the Door, and my pick for favorite song, top song on that was Push, and my bottom song was The Baby Screams. So do we want to do both records at the same time, or do we want to just...
Let's talk about The Cure for
I want to say that your number one pick is absolutely correct. I'd like you to expand on Push, please.
Well, I'm going to go one further. Expand on Push, and also just because we're not doing the whole list like we do on normal podcasts, talk a little bit about how you feel about Head on the Door overall.
So Head on the Door, for me, it's probably top three Cure records for me. I love it. And Push is, I mean, that song has steadily risen in the ranks over the years, to be probably tied for my top, two Cure songs. Because it's a great song, like the swell that builds, and it comes in, and all the instrumentation. Who was it that was talking about, they thought it was an instrumental?
Me.
They were like, oh, it was Jim. Yeah, tell that story. That's the good story about Push.
No, it's just I didn't know that was a thing where you could not sing for the first 2 minutes of a song and then sing. I was 14 years old, and
had never heard Stairway to Heaven.
Well, the Beatles never did that.
Well, that's all that matters.
Yeah, but and when it comes in, and just with that, like that pleading, just right off the bat, it's, you know, and the words, the feeling, and then it just crashes all at the end. It's just got everything that I love about The Cure, that kind of like wailing sound, the great guitars, the great drums too. I mean, Boris is just fabulous on that song.
By the way, that wailing sound is a great way to describe him. I love that.
Yeah.
So who's next? Somebody else talk about their favorite or least favorite Cure song.
Well, my
we have one
least
controversial
favorite.
Pick for least favorite.
I'll go last. How's that?
Okay.
There you go.
I don't have a lot to say about any of these least favorite songs, mostly because I looked at them again after we listened to these 2 or 3 months ago and just said, like I did 2 months ago, I don't really remember it. And these are all albums that I was kind of semi-familiar with. So if I didn't remember it at all, good or bad, I put it last. That's kind of been my... I've been listening a lot more since then, but for these, I think that was kind of my number one feeling of where to guide me to the bottom. But I also agree with your number one pick. Push is probably my favorite Cure song, possibly. If only for that riff. That riff is just...
Yeah.
It could go on forever and ever. And we talked about, you know, it's almost an instrumental. Because there's so long before the vocals kick in, but it's done in a really good way. So if you can pull that off, then you get my number one spot.
I would like to just concur on the Push movement that's going on. There's something that happens when the vocals do kick in. At that point, what is your emotion right there? You know, the emotion might be that you want to go, go, go. I mean, the lyrics match exactly how you're feeling. It's like, fuck, go, go, go. And
where are you going with that?
Oh, God, I don't care. Just somewhere, man. You're moving at that point in the song. And it's so good. The vocals are so good. We all love Robert's voice. There is also a thing going on, I think, with all four of us, where we're all like Anglophiles at that point. And I remember talking about on the original Zoom how the fact that, you know, Strawberries and Cream, you know, I just love anything British. I was like, oh my God, so British. I bet you they serve that at Wimbledon, you know. everything was so cool about it. And and I absolutely love that song. It's definitely number one. And Head on the Door as an album was I think it was the third show I ever went to, the third concert. And it was unbelievably excellent at 14 years old in San Diego.
I can't believe that. Dan.
How could it not be? All right, so broadly, Head on the Door is an unbelievably great album. We always talk about where our line is. My line is definitely underneath the last song. This is an unbelievable album. The other thing is, you know, as I got, this was also the first Cure album I ever heard, but really, since I've gotten to know their whole catalog, like there's kind of the two Cures, right? Like Robert Smith is the spectrum from very, very dark to very, very poppy. And there are times he goes a little too far down each side of the spectrum.
Hot, hot, hot.
And actually, no, the far right is Friday I'm in Love.
No, what's the other one where he's so happy he could scream?
I don't know.
Sam?
Mint Car?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Anyways, there's a couple. Yeah, there's more than one on the far right. I feel like Head on the Door arguably gets that balance the best, the most right. Like it's just, it's on all sides. And the sheer number of things he pulls out of his bag, right? It's like the sax on the night Like This, the flamenco on The Blood, like that.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll fight you guys on this, but that friggin' bass line on Screw, like...
Yes. I love it.
There are so many great moments on this. My number one was not Push. My number one was In Between Days. If there were any justice in this world, that is the mega single. That is The Cure's top five single. That's like there because it's just such a, it's a pop hit, but it's pop done The Cure way. And it's just, it's just gorgeous and it's beautifully done. The reason these guys want to fight me is because I picked my last song as Sinking.
Oh.
I don't hate Sinking.
Oh.
I do not hate Sinking.
Oh.
But
something
and you know,
had
it's
to go last.
I was thinking about this, Jim. I was listening to it again today, and it's ironic that you are so offended by that because I feel like Sinking doesn't change much. Like, yes, there's a key change, but it kind of just goes, and I'm into that, but you're usually the anti, like, the song that just goes and doesn't have anything different.
But Dan,
yeah,
so
talk to me.
Why Jim likes it so much is a recurring theme on the show.
Yes.
Usually there's at least one song.
Yes.
Jim, why do you like that song so much?
It's really good on drugs.
Thank you very much.
And so I get it. You can't go against that. That's fair. I don't hate Sinking. In my mind, it's the worst on the album. The only other one I'll let you replace it with, which you also like too much, is Six Different Ways.
Oh God, that's a great song.
Wow. That's a great fucking song. That's a fucking great
Something's song. Gotta be last. What did you have last, Jim? What did you have last?
Screw.
See,
it is so clearly in last place. There's such a gap between
that riff is too good.
Yeah. Oh,
and
God.
I forgot to say that mine is Kyoto song, not that it,
and just the sound on that bass. It's insane. It's like machine
that's
gun.
Awesome. Nope.
That's awesome. So the next album we did was 1986's Black Celebration by The Cure. I saw
Wait,
that.
By who?
Is it by The Cure?
Oh, there you go.
He has right Cure colored glasses. Every album is by The Cure.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's not by The Cure, Sam.
Did I say The Cure?
You did.
Anyway.
You're always calling out The Cure when you're in the heat of the moment.
It's been all that whiskey that Dan drank.
It's getting to your head. 1986's
Black Celebration by Depeche Mode. For me, this record is pretty much like I had started to get back into Depeche Mode. Like I had their first record because I heard it really early on, probably from videos on a local station. And then kind of fell out with that. I didn't really know of them. But then in ninth grade, I think it was... Dave Lindsay had a cassette of People Are People and was playing it in our theater class.
The Dave
Lindsay.
And
I was like, this is great. What'd you say, Adam?
The David Lindsay.
The David Lindsay.
Dave.
And I was like, this music's so great. Who is it? Depeche Mode. I'm like, I kind of remember them. And then, you know, got People Are People, got into it. And then this was the first record that came out after my resurgence into Depeche Mode. And And subsequently led to my favorite concert experience ever was seeing them at Red Rocks that summer.
Oh,
and Sam, I'm curious to know, is this your favorite Depeche album?
I think it probably does. Yeah, I think so. Yes, absolutely. Now,
wow.
Now that I just there went through them all, I was like, okay, going forward, then going backward.
Yes. It's just rocketed into the number one
That's
position
great.
as we listened.
We'll try and post the video of Sam thinking about it because it was quite a sight to see that
right.
his gears were turning.
Right. He went through the full range of emotions. And your favorite track on this is?
My favorite track on this is the title track, Black Celebration.
Nice one.
And my line is
I'll drink probably, to that.
My line is probably, you know, maybe one or two off the bottom. I mean, I think we included when we ranked. I think the three of us included, but not tonight. Adam did not because he was reading the Wikipedia because that song they added after the initial U.S. release. And I read recently that it was Martin Gore or somebody was like, some radio station was playing it and they like interviewed him or something. And they're like, if you leave this song off, like you're nuts. And so they actually put it on the record. And that's kind of how it got on there is because some like random station was playing the shit out of it. And then it was that close to like the release of the record that they were like, okay,
some we'll guy on KCR, I think that's it.
That's me. No,
you know what you should do.
Hey, Martin, let me give you some advice. Sit down.
The Yanks will love it.
Yeah. I had a CD that was stolen from my car along with all my Depeche Mode CDs when we first started heavy metal Depeche Mode, what do you call it, mashup band called Blasphemous Guitars years ago. So I had this empty case, and a friend of mine was nice enough to burn all those albums for me. So I was going off of that. I'd burned it into my iTunes, but I like Sam said, I went to Wikipedia to grab the song titles and didn't look that closely because I probably would have put But Not Tonight as my number one, which would have been all four of us, if I'm not mistaken.
No,
you had
Black
Celebration.
No,
I'm sorry about that. So I had Stripped as my number one pretty much because of the version from the 101 movie because it was just so epic. Nice. With them slamming
amazing song.
Big things with bits of pipe. And
yes.
I should say that like The Cure and Depeche Mode and The Smiths, these were not my holy trinity like they were for a lot of people, including these three, maybe.
New Order's got to be in there, too.
For my holy trinity was more New Order, Echo, and Love and Rockets, but I still like these other three bands, but I had lots of friends that worshipped these three. So these were kind of like peripheral, but I liked them, and I have a few albums by almost all of them. As I said before, I almost didn't need to own them in high school because Dan and his friends listened to them pretty much nonstop. So I knew almost all the songs and never owned anything for years and years and years. My number 11 on this album is Sometimes because I have no recollection of how that song goes unless it is a Erasure cover, which I'm pretty sure it ain't.
No. But Vince Clarke, who was in Erasure, was one of the founding members of Depeche Mode, wrote pretty much the entire first record, then left, then leaving Martin Gore as the songwriter, who carried the torch admirably.
Hey, Sam,
this
what was
is your, all true.
Sam, what was your last pick on this album? Your worst song?
My last pick was Dressed in Black. I didn't hate it, but it's just it was
I get it.
It was just kind of a little plodding at times, but. But yeah, I mean, for me, this one's my last, my line is probably around like 11 or 10.
Okay.
I would say. I love a lot of this record.
Depeche Mode was never my band. I think there was too much leather in the band for me to really like say, like, I want to identify with that band.
Is that a thing? Too much leather?
Yeah.
Can there be too much leather?
I don't know.
Well, especially at that time because it was hair metal time. Like it was like Motley Crue and all those
who
bands.
Who also wore leather.
Which, and Depeche Mode toured with all of them, right?
No, but I was like, wait a minute, they're dressing up. You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, I'm sitting here loving The Cure, and they're wearing lipstick, so I shouldn't be so picky. But it just, I couldn't identify with them, and I had got People Are People. What's the one with Lie to Me on it? Track two is Lie to Me. That's a really, Some
that's
Great
People
Reward.
Friggin' Some Great Reward.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, and I like that. And then there was that Master and Servant thing that I was like, eh. But then this album comes out, I believe, is the next one, if I remember my history. And I didn't really like the singles. I love Stripped, but I didn't like the Question of Time single. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to buy that album. I'll just tape it. Tape sat in the tape deck for a while, and the more I heard Here Is the House, I went, oh my god, that's the best song ever. The harmonies on Here Is the House make it number one. It is a clear number one. And the last, the worst song in the album is that one that goes And I think it doesn't matter two or something like that. It
takes the sequel's never as good.
Yeah. Except for I heard that Bad Boys 2 is a really good movie today. So
I'll add it to the list. Haven't seen it. All right. So Black Celebration is an amazing album. It has definitely spent a lot of weeks at the top of my best Depeche album chart. It's either Black Celebration, Songs of Faith and Devotion has logged some time at the top.
Interesting.
Of course, Violator. I mean, of course, Violator sits up there a huge percentage of the time. And guys, the current occupant of best Depeche album is actually Some Great Reward. I'm way back into that album right now. I agree with Jim. Master and Servant is not the highlight of that album, but man, is that a great album. Anyways, great. So I talked about Cure is like sad to pop, like that's their spectrum. Depeche's spectrum is sad to horny, right? Like it's either a sad song, it's a horny song. Sometimes it's a sad and horny song.
But very frequently it's both.
Yeah, which is fine. That's great. Totally. But every once in a while, they access like this third mode, which is like this hopeful song. And hopeful Depeche is like fucking amazing. It's like ecstatic. Really? And actually, Jim, your pick is in there. Like Here Is the House is classic hopeful Depeche.
Those tender moments.
Under This Roof. But the other classic from this album that is so full of hope is But Not Tonight. It makes me cry just thinking of it. Yeah. It is such a gorgeous, amazing song. It might be my favorite Depeche song of all time.
Ooh.
Absolutely love it. The moon is shining in the sky. Unbelievable.
That's a great, great description. And your worst song in the
Thank
album,
you. Dan? Worst song on the album is that piece of shit called New Dress.
Let's name
some
topical
politics things from the 80s. That's how I sum that up. I hate, now we're going to be political, guys. The like, hey, the one Let's Be Political song always turns me off. We'll get back to that.
So what they're saying is New Dress is Depeche Mode's We Didn't Start the Fire.
With less words that you could follow and go like, hey, that was kind of clever. He just rhymed.
Wow. But now that I'm thinking about it, that's actually a whole thing of songs, right? Like,
oh, it totally is.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Well, but here's the difference. It's the end of the world is like bizarro stream of consciousness. That's more true. Bob Dylan, like that I'm okay with. Just don't start preaching to me like, oh, we are worshiping our surface level things and we just care about Princess Di's new dress. Yeah.
How do you feel about Princess Diana dancing to Billy Joel, which I watched last night on The Crown?
I don't have an opinion yet.
Okay. Well, give me your opinion on an album that you love from Australia, Dan, because that's our next album that we did.
All right. Let's do the math on NXS Kick, right?
Right.
NXS Kick, I did the math on it. It turns out 50% of this album has not aged well. I'm just going to say it. I'm a huge NXS. No, a third. I'm going to go a third.
You've already downgraded.
A third of this album has not aged well. 25% of it is like good enough. And the rest are classics. Like massive soundtrack of our lives classics. Like
carry
put them
the one.
On.
How many is that then? The math threw me because you changed.
Yeah, so the
carry
math.
The
so,
one.
So we've got 12 songs on this album. So I'm going to go
Dan, I would say half. Half of them are
classics.
Absolute classics.
I'll give you five. I'll give you five classics.
Okay.
Cool. We're like in a bazaar now. Yeah. So I'm gonna go five classics. That leaves us with seven left. Yeah, seven left. So we're gonna go. You know, four have not aged well. Three are like good enough. Jim's holding his tongue.
Yeah.
Anyways, though, like they have a sound, right? It's those sharp guitars. It's the sax, and above all, it's Michael Hutchins. Like. They lay a good rhythm section, but like Michael Hutchins just, it's funny because all these years have passed and I'm like, I don't know, maybe just that I was into him as a teenager and like clearly he was like the cool, you know, cool and stuff. But you listen now, he just, the charisma oozes through the speakers. Like it's stunning to me how much that still holds up. And granted, maybe I'm still accessing like that time in my life. Anyways, absolutely loved it. Hard
Grow
for me
up,
to pick.
Man.
Hard for me to pick a number one. I'm going to sheepishly pull these patches off my jacket. number one, I went with New Sensation. I went with New Sensation because they're just pulling out. It's like pull out all the stops energy that says tonight is going to be the best night of our lives. Like it just has that vibe. And it's just got all those little touches like, hey, baby, hey. Boom, boom, like just those little, it's just full of those things that felt so damn cool. And they still do in my own little world.
What did you not like on that album of all your things that didn't age well?
A fair number, but Wildlife is just, the lyrics are so cringeworthy. I mean, you know, this album's not known for its lyrical brilliance, but when the music doesn't hold it up either and there's no catch, it really starts to break down, and that is definitely Wildlife.
Yeah, fair enough. And that was also my last one. Again, one that I don't remember, and I remember pretty much every other song on that album. To what Dan said, yeah, he definitely had that thing, which Dan and I both witnessed when INXS rolled through town on that tour. And I still, for all the hundreds of concerts I've been to, it's probably the most girls losing their shit that I've ever seen.
Oh yeah,
at a high volume.
Sex pot
was quite a fun thing to watch. But I never owned this one. I was a swing guy for sure. I never owned another one. But,
I've heard that about you.
Yeah, you know. but I definitely liked most of the songs on this album. It was fun to revisit it. Number one for me was Never Tear Us Apart. It's a straightforward love song I don't think is cheesy, which is about the rarest thing in the world.
Especially for you, Adam. Especially for you.
Yeah, just not my thing. But it's done so well with strings or fake strings or whatever it is. Yeah. But I was in a band that played two weddings, both ended in divorce, and one of them, the bride, well, don't hire this band. We retired the name because it's just bad luck. But
so someone did tear them apart is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Bing.
Yeah. So yeah, the bride chose this one to walk down the aisle to. So oops. But it worked for us because we actually tried to learn it before the reception because it was so great. Watching her walk down the aisle, it's not that hard of a song, but we couldn't quite pull it off. But we played a club show because those songs were so fun to play. And man, to have a sax player come just to do that sax part was pretty fun.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Super fun. So, Jim, what'd you think of this? Did you listen to this album, Jim?
Oh, I listened to it. You guys forced me to over and over again, and I believe
I think we helped you down feeling, physically, Jim. Didn't we?
I know the feeling.
I remember getting really drunk before we got on Zoom and talked about this one.
That's right.
And I remember saying there must be no rivers in Australia because these guys have never heard of a bridge. It is absolutely the most painful album, just fingernails and chalkboard. But and it starts off with the worst song, which is Guns in the Sky.
Yes.
And it's just horrible.
It's the worst.
God. And it That's just went down song. Hill from there, except for the bright spot, which was that song, Dream On White Boy, Dream On Black Girl.
Wrong album.
I hope you're kidding.
Oh, no. I remember. It was that song.
Oh, my God.
No. My favorite song on the album is This Time is the Last Time That We Will Fight Like This. Okay. No, so is it the Don't Change the World?
He's not even
going
to be naming INXS songs. He's going to be like...
Because there's so many...
Great song. It's so good.
Don't Change is amazing. I always listen to Don't Change.
Hell yeah.
No way. Is that on this album?
No, and it sucks that it's not, because I had to listen to an album with none of those songs on it, and two of those songs, This Time and Don't Change, are on heavy rotation in my house.
Jim, we'll do a greatest hits for you next.
No. We can swerve the rest of INXS. I'm not fanboying over Michael Hutchins or Martin Gore in Leather, and let's move on. Number one.
Say what your true favorite song on this album is.
The hit. First single, Need You Tonight. There you go. Thank you.
Need You Tonight.
Fair enough. Sam, what'd you
think? Was also my favorite record, or my favorite song from the record. I agree with Dan that there are classics on this, like Devil Inside, New Sensation, Never Tear Us Apart. I like Tiny Daggers. I had Tiny Daggers up there. But I mean, that, like, it, when for fans of NXS, so not Jim, like, when you start reeling off those songs, when you start reeling off those songs, like, people know them. Like, they know the songs. And it's not just, I know them a little bit, because, yes, they were played all over MTV, all over radio, alternative radio, pop radio, like, they were everywhere, like, rock radio. But yeah, I mean, I was a pretty solid NXS fan by the time that this one came out, and this did not sway me that much. There were songs, like the songs toward the bottom, that I didn't listen to. Guns in the Sky, like I said, was my bottom track, and for an album opener, that one just went right to the bottom. But
you guys just don't like grunting.
Yeah. Correct.
It's got its place. It's got its place in rock, but not the way he was doing it.
You know how Dan was saying that there's sides to The Cure and there's sides to Depeche? There's just one side to NXS.
Let's get it on.
I respectfully disagree, but there's the horny side, and then there's the horny side with horns.
All right. Jim chose our next record. And
speaking
if
of
I
horns,
recall,
Jim, take it away.
Oh my God.
And if I recall, Jim was so excited. He had us do it like the night after, or maybe two nights, but I'm pretty sure it was the very next night.
Because yeah, don't you guys know this album? It was the Tears for Fears. It was Songs from the Big Chair. My first
backward and forward.
My first concert ever. My dad would not let me go to. My parents wouldn't let me go to concerts without checking it out for themselves, because they were so afraid of what, you know, the mosh pit would be like, or the drugs that would be there and all that stuff.
The Tears for Fears.
And so I strategically chose Tears for Fears to be the first concert, because my dad had to go with me to check out the scene, and it of course was just this calm, you know, beautiful environment. And he said, okay, you can go by yourself from here on out. My second concert was the Smiths, and I was in fifth row, and it was beautiful. And that's what I went for. I think I've told that story already on this pod. Anyway, it's not the best Tears for Fears album, but I knew that we would know it backwards and forwards, and I knew we could rank it pretty easily. And what is it, 8 songs?
Yep.
So tight eight. So the worst song is Listen, but that's a great song. I have no problem with that. And the best song is The Working Hour. And that is the most beautiful start to finish, just, oh God, soul-inspiring song. I love that freaking song.
So is the line on this record at under 8 for all of us? Like, we all like all 8 songs?
No, not for, no, Adam's got it coming for this album. Adam doesn't love this album.
Yeah.
No, and that's the hardest part of this podcast for me, is I don't want to be a Shrugs buzzkill. It's fun in some ways, but I know how much you guys love it, so I hate to be the guy that comes on and goes, I kind of find
them. You gotta be who you are.
Yes, but like, I don't know. I'll find my inner Simon Cowell as time goes on. But I think Jim and I talked about it the other day. It's just that I find this album and most of what they did after this album to be pretty pretentious. And this is coming from a guy who loved The Hurting. So somehow when you're being more synthy and out there, it's okay, but the passion does not speak to me the way it speaks to you guys. It's that kind of earnestness that I can't do.
I respect that. I respect that.
Yeah.
To each their own, but for me, my least favorite one was Listen. I think that was the last song.
Yep.
Kind of a Peter Gabriel kind of vibe. It was a hard, the only real hard listen as far as like all the albums that we've done. And by the end, I was like, I'm out after like a minute. I couldn't even finish it. But my number one was, sorry, dude,
homework, dude. We did so much homework for you, and you're not even doing, it's an 8-song album and you're out at 7.5.
I don't want to let out my inner Simon Cowell, so I just don't listen to the album.
Yeah,
yeah, fair enough. There's a big gong that we have upstairs, and Charlotte gonged it like halfway through, and I was just like, oh. Not my fault. Not
Adam's
my fault.
Also not training for a marathon, so he doesn't have as much free time as you.
Right. We were listening to it the night that you suggested it, Jim, and the first comment from Charlotte was orchestra hits and walked away. It was great. But that said, my favorite song on the album is Mother's Talk, which probably has the most orchestra hits. And to me, the whole backing sounds like a Nara Noise song. And that's probably why I like it so much, because I love the art of noise.
Very good.
But so if you can't say something nice, say you love Mother's Talk because it sounds like the art of noise. Next.
Okay, Sam.
Actually, I'll draft off of Adam because if you don't mind, because I have the same number one.
Go.
Yeah.
Mother's Talk. I don't remember that. Is a full-on jam, the just like that tribal beat. First of all, I frigging adore this album. This album is unbelievable. Yeah. The line is at number 10, and there's only 8 songs on this album. it was really tight between Mother's Talk and Working Hour because I absolutely love them. But, you know, like The Hurting, which I absolutely love, was kind of one thing. Like they did one thing really well the whole album. I mean, there's some differences, definitely, like Suffer the Chiller. There's like interesting bits. But they blew it open on Songs from the Big Chair. That's what I really love. And I think almost every risk they took paid off. Like it's really interesting. And I just think Mother's Talk, it's kind of hard to believe it's only one album later. Now, granted, it is like 3 or 4 years later, right? Like they took a long time in between. But they've evolved a long way between that. And it's only their second album. Like, it's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Anyways, I love both those songs, but I went with Mother's Talk. As you guys know, almost every time I tend to pick a hit single as one of my top ones. I think a lot of times hit singles for a reason. And I try not to hold being overplayed against them. But this album is the exception. My least favorite, number 6 is Shout, and my number 8 is Everybody Wants to Rule the World. And it's not that I don't like it, but I just think there's less interesting about it. It's kind of a very straightforward song where almost everything else here is just interesting and unusual in some way.
Oh, my God.
So that's my controversial number 8.
Such a bad call. I can't imagine. I mean,
it's totally not.
The bridge alone and it's the guitar work.
The bridge is great, but you don't reward a song just for the bridge. Like, there's more to the song.
You do when the rest of it is unbelievable,
sometimes
too. Oh, my God. There's nothing bad bridge. About that song at all.
You know what's funny? Even back in, what year is this album? 85
or 86?
85.
Even back then, I remembered thinking, for someone who loves this album so much, I should like this single more. But from the beginning, it was a shrug for me. It was like, I mean, it's good, but why is this the song everyone's crazy about?
That's why. That's why.
That didn't sell it. Right there.
And yet you like and yet you like the bass line and Screw. I just don't understand you at all.
Because the bass line and Screw sounds like it's gonna beat you up and take your lunch money.
I'm sorry I brought it up. Oh God.
That bridge is the best moment on the whole album, by the way.
Yes, I will say thank you, Adam.
Go ahead, Sam. Follow it up. I'll close it out by supporting Jim. Because Everybody Wants to Rule the World was my favorite song on this record. I knew The Hurting. I knew it pretty well. And this album came out. To your point, Dan, like this record, they kind of expanded their sound and expanded their songwriting skills. I mean, the songwriting on this is amazing. And like the lead off with Shout, I mean, come on, a great album opener, just a statement right out the gate. But they didn't explode it so much as they just expanded it, right? Like because it's not The Head on the Door, it's not Kyoto Song and The Blood and In Between Days and Sinking, and you know, it's not all these other different things and Close to Me. I mean, everybody forgets that song because it's overplayed and nobody wants to hear it anymore. But yeah, like this song was just like it just expanded out from what they had done. And it's not that they were necessarily taking any risks, but it all just feels as a whole, and which they really pulled together with going from Broken into Head Over Heels,
so
and then
great.
Outro of Broken, at just so good. They just did it so well. And again, like I think it has been said a couple times, Listen was the bottom song for me, but not because I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But it's just one song had to be ranked at the bottom, and this one just kind of slides out, which I like as an album closer.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the only reason I love this record too.
Beautiful.
Nice. So then Adam had the next pick.
So I wanted to choose a record that I hadn't heard in a while, which is something that every year or so, maybe, or some record that I owned and liked that I realized I haven't heard that in 30, 40 years, whatever it is. And I thought, what would fit? Because we had been choosing pretty much all records from the mid 80s. And we never really talked about why we should pick albums and if we should all like them or whatever. But I thought, oh, I'll go along with what they've been picking, and thought I'd pick something from my ninth grade, the grade that I nice. Moved to the new neighborhood and met Dan and Jim for the first time. And that is the Pretty in Pink soundtrack, which turned 35 years old this week, if I'm not mistaken. I think I saw someone post that somewhere. And it wasn't a huge movie for me. I only remember seeing it maybe the one time in the theater, but I definitely had the record before I saw it and yeah. liked most of the songs on it. It's definitely John Hughes's kind of best release soundtrack. There, Ferris Bueller is a good one too, but we can talk about that some other time. And 16 Candles as well, where there was only like a promo EP released from that. They both have right. great music, but it was fun to listen to it. There were definitely some songs on there I hadn't heard in 35 years. Others, you know, I hear here and there. My least favorite song on the record was a one called Round Round by a band called Bluey Sun, which I believe Dan turned me on to all those years ago. We were saying that I had a cassette with the Pet Shop Boys on one side and Bluey Sun on the other. Nice. Kind of a simple song that's nothing to write home about. So that's probably why it's at the bottom for me. And for number one, was kind of a hard one. I had a couple different songs at the top, but finally went with Bring on the Dancing Horses by Echo and the Bunnymen, nice. Which was one where we do this a lot or talk about it a lot on the podcast, where we realize that we have to take away the fact that we've heard it a million times and sometimes recognize that it's such a great song. And maybe we don't get excited about it anymore, but there's just no denying how beautiful it is. And kind of surprised to hear how synthy it was. You know, it's definitely a little less organic than a lot of the stuff that they did.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of pulsing keyboard through a lot of it, and never really noticed it, but listen to it, I'm like, it kind of works. But it's just a pretty, pretty song, so that was my number one. Dan?
So when I listened to this album, I was trying to think of, it feels like, to me anyways, this was one of those first soundtracks where a director kind of put their absolute stamp on the movie, and it sort of shaped, you know, a couple years worth of music, right? Like now it feels right. like there's been Tarantino and you know, who's the guy that does all the, like, Wes Anderson and, right? Like there's these like auteurs and stuff. Anything before that, like maybe The Harder They Come, but like that was like a superstar album, but I don't know if like it was the director, if it was just, anyways, I mean, I just think like John Hughes, I think, really had a massive impact on just kind of culture over those years. And I feel like this album is just like ground zero of that. And this is the equivalent of like going to an all-star game, you pick your favorite sport, and like looking right and there's Michael Jordan, left and there's, you know, Magic Johnson, and just like all the stars in one place. The
Dream Team,
the lineup on this album is insane. And so it was a great pick because it made it incredibly hard, because like when else are you going to be like New Order versus Smiths versus Echo all in one arena, you know, there could be only one. Obviously my least favorite wasn't any of those. It was Wouldn't It Be Good, which is like this completely weightless, spineless song that just that we all learned through this process was like a cover of a song. Like, you know, this guy took the song that actually was decent the first time and just dialed it in. It didn't belong on this album at all, in my opinion. The number two song deserves a honorable mention because I don't think any of us picked it as number one, but Left of Center by Suzanne Vega is so frigging good.
Amen.
With the assist from Joe Jackson. unbelievable song. It's actually, Adam, I loved this pick because I hadn't listened to this album, like you said, in the 3 decades or whatever. This song, though, I still remembered word for word, like left of center. I absolutely remembered. My number one was also Bringing on the Dancing Horses, which is a song I did not at all think for a second was going to be my number one. I remembered it as like not at all one of my top Echo picks. In fact, I think you said this too last time, Adam, like this isn't either of our favorite Echo songs by a long shot. And yet when I heard it again, I forgot just how many touches there were. Like, first of all, the whole thing shimmers like it's friggin' the sun off the ocean.
So good.
You know, off the surface of the ocean. It's just like, it's gorgeous. And then there's all these touches. And then, of course, when it gets to that chorus with those drums, the double drums, and first I'm gonna make it, right? Like, just like he brings it home. I have no idea what the lyrics mean. I don't know who Jimmy Brown is. I don't know who Charlie Clown is. I have no idea what the hell he's talking about, but the thing is just amazing. And of course, Ian McCullough with that voice, like, just brings it home.
That voice.
That's my top. Brother.
So good. So, much like you, Dan, I love Left of Center. It was my number 7. And my comment was, Dan's shaking his head. My comment was that when it came on second, I was like, oh yeah, this is one of the top songs. But then they just kept stacking the hits after hit after hit. And I'm like, I you know, like, and it's just like my sensibility. Like it couldn't fight its way to the top.
Could you move a little further down, Ms. Vega? You're going to have to make room for the folks from New Order.
right. But like you, my least favorite was Wouldn't It Be Good. My comment on it was spend the money to license Nick Kershaw's version, and it wouldn't be in the last spot, maybe.
Right.
You know, because Get to Know Ya, I hadn't heard, I never listened to it. I don't even know if I remember taping it the first time, but when I listened to it all these years later, I was like, damn, this is a really good Prince ripoff.
Yes.
And that was like my number 9 song. So like all the rest of them, I even like the Bluey Sump. Like for me, the line on this one's number 9 under number 9. You know, Wouldn't It Be Good, I would leave off, but the rest of them I all really like. But it culminates, it peaks out with Please, Please, Please Let Me Get What I Want, which is, it's such a perfect little encapsulation of a song. I mean, it starts off with that guitar, with Johnny's guitar, and then, you know, Good Times for a Change, and it's like, you know, it's like the 6-word novel, right? Like, baby shoes for sale, never worn. You know, like that Good Times for a Change, and you're like, whoa, like this guy's life sucks, you know, but it's getting better maybe. And then it just ends with like that, like how it kind of like shimmers out, like to reuse your word, Dan. But yeah, I mean, it's so very, very strong record. I even had the NXS song number 3, which I know a lot of y'all had lower. But the chorus on that one's just so damn good. Like I could talk about this record for a long time, but Dan, you said, something about like, I mean, there's so many great records. Like you said, The Harder They Come. For me, the first record, and it's still one of my favorite soundtracks of all time, one of my favorite records of all time, is the soundtrack to Times Square, which is a movie.
Good one.
Who's the guy? I can't remember all the movies he was in. But it's got like 1 star, and but the soundtrack is Same Old Scene by Roxy Music. It's got XTC's Take This Town. It's got Grinding Halt by The Cure. It's got Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. It's got Pretty Boys by Joe Jackson. It's got Pissing in the River by Patti Smith. I mean, and it's a double record, and it's just stacked full of all these great songs. And they all, like when you watch the movie, they're all in there, and they're all popping. They've all got a place. I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones.
Just
so, like,
go that, read them all. Just go get the record and read them all. We're halfway there.
I'm not going to do it. but yeah. But so for me, wow, that's the, and that was released in like 82 or something like that, kind of around the same time as Erg, A Music War, and it was just one of those ones I saw on cable, and just like that one kind of grabbed me. But you're absolutely right, like for the 80s it was John Hughes, and it was like for us anyway. I'm sure there's like other record, I mean, no spoilers, but yeah, for a, you know, a certain white teenager dude, like this was the big record.
And Jim. Interesting that he actually didn't direct this one. I think we talked about that a little right. originally.
Yeah. But, oh, and the movie sucks. The movie's terrible.
Don't go see it.
It's good as the soundtrack is, the movie is.
It was called awesome. The Times Square of its generation.
But he had a big hand in the movies that he produced, and maybe he wrote this one as well. I'm not 100% sure.
Bunch of them.
But when it came to the music, he said he kind of put his foot down, and the director probably didn't have a problem with that because he had such great taste.
I didn't know this soundtrack. I knew it Bring on the Dancing Horses was on it, and I knew that was going to be number one. I listened to the whole thing. I'm going through it, and I'm like, oh my God, what is this Prince song? And, you know, it's horrible. But anyway, that's the worst song in the album. And there was a couple other duds. You're right about Left of Center. Shell Shocked isn't my favorite New Order song. But anyway, I get to almost the end, and then all of a sudden, or is it the last track? Please, please, please.
It's the last track.
I think it is. And I went, holy crap. Well, obviously, this is number one. I mean, why are you even playing this game? There's a clear number one, and it's that, because it's the best song ever. So great that John Hughes uses it twice, right? So anyway, it's easy. Sam said all the great things about it. And that's my take on Pretty in Pink.
Nice.
I would like to say that I only have about 9 minutes, no, 7 minutes remaining in battery life.
Let's bring it home for Jim.
We're wrapping it up.
Yeah.
Well, good catching
Sam,
up.
Should we throw it to Sam?
Yeah, let's
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Sam, what are we going to do next week?
I said no spoilers because, like, when I was talking about that one, because I was saying, you know, like, for a certain section of people, you know, probably like non-white people, but what I have decided to pick is we're going back to the future from Love, from the 60s. We're going back all the way up to back to the 80s. We are
back
going
to the future soundtrack
for the next record, the soundtrack to the movie Purple Rain by Prince.
Yes,
nice one.
Love it. I'm 100%
in. Big sigh.
Big sigh from Jim.
Oh, I'm
we got a couple
so
in. Big sigh from Jim.
Me too. Nice to have some color on this show for once. Besides Black Celebration, of course.
Minneapolis is not in the UK, so I'm out.
All right. So you're gonna hate it when I also bring up the Replacements.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Nice.
Purple Rain. Love it. All right, another color. We're going to get through the whole rainbow eventually.
And then we'll bring it back with the Muppet Show soundtrack with Rainbow Connection.
Yes.
Don't get me started. All right, thanks for listening, you guys. We will see you next week.
Please follow We Will Rank You at We Will Rank You Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And let us know how you would rank tonight's tunes. Sam writes about music on the web at yourolderbrother.com. You can find Adam's music page at yourdoinggreat.com. That's YERDOIN. Please subscribe, rank, and review our show at your favorite pod place. And send us a note with suggestions and flattery to wewillrankyoupod@gmail.com. By the way, these closing credits are being read by me, David Gimbel, Adam's actual producer. At least that's what his mother told me.